Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hello, wackos. Welcome to another episode of Without a Country. I am Corinne Fisher. The hell was that? I was like, are we doing sound effects now? It's like the Z Morning Zoo. All right. Welcome to the show. What happened this week? Oh, I mean, big week. I talked about it a little bit on Guys We Fucked. That'll come out in a couple weeks, but I don't want to beat a dead horse or an alive horse because I love animals. I closed my brick and mortar Perfectly Centered, which I had been talking about for a couple weeks on here. So it was a very emotional week. It was a very, it was a decision I was wanted. It's what I wanted because I want to really put 110% back into art. And, you know, again, I just don't want to be like living someone else's dream for the rest of my life. But it was an incredible experience. Highly recommend if you have the luxury of just having a life where you can stop and run a brick and mortar for 3 years, which I know is not most people. But I figured, well, I chose this really unique lifestyle for myself, so why don't I take advantage of all the things I can do with such a unique lifestyle? So I mean, mostly an artistic endeavor, and also I was like, well, I have the ability to take some of the burden off my mother, who was already dealing with so much at the time. And I was like, it's a little COVID-y. I'm a comedian. I'll handle the store. You handle the other, you know, the family stuff. It has come to an end, and it's weird because you do have to kind of like, I guess other people with dead parents knew this better than I did, because people kept like oddly checking in on me, and I was like, I'm fine, I'm excited. Like, I'm excited to like go on the Eye of the Tiger tour and like all these things that I wouldn't be able to do if I was watching over my store so much. And I definitely was like very unexpectedly excessively emotional over it. But then I realized, I'm like, it is like kind of like this final goodbye to my dad, even though he's, you know, I hate to say it, it's so hacky, like, he's always with me, which is also stupid, because it's like, yes, I feel him with me, but like, unless you have someone close to you has died, like, I would recommend not saying that, because it's like, it's a dumb thing to say, because it's like, yes, you can feel the dead person with you like a little bit, but it's nowhere near like what you experienced with them in human form. So therefore, it's a dumb thing to say. Again, unless like you can talk about your own experience that way, but like to say to someone else, he's always with you, is just like, just don't, you know, I would recommend just not. All right. We still have an eBay store up. I'll keep updating the Instagram, because it really reignited my fucking love of collectibles. I mean, I am going to be buying so much old shit on eBay. it's really going to be out of control, and I'm pretty excited about it. So we'll do that a little bit. But again, thank you to everyone who came to the store in person. And honestly, thanks to everyone who followed the store on Instagram. It's so many like unexpected people followed the store on Instagram. And, you know, I'm petty as fuck, so I do check for that. And, like, if someone's pissing me off a little bit, but then I don't care if they're following me. But if they're following Perfectly Centered Store, like, that really puts them on my love you forever list. So I have taken extensive notes of everyone who's done that. Like, for real, means the world. Because it's like, you're on board. That means you're on board with, like, the essence of who I am, not just, like, the hot stuff, not just, like, the guys we fucked, you know? And I feel the same way about for people who are following this show. That means, like, you're really into, like, who I am at the core, not just, like, the most popular thing I did or have done. It's not going to be the most popular thing I've ever done. But you don't know that yet. All right. So that was the first order of business. My apartment literally looks like a collectible store now. So just, I mean, the physical labor I've put in alone in the past several weeks. Also, it really flared up my OCD. I have to talk about this in therapy tomorrow, but like it really flared up this, the closing of the store, not the existence of the store, the attachment to inanimate objects because they like hold so much memory. And I was looking up like what kind of a disorder is that and if it's associated with obsessive compulsive disorder. And there is a word for it, which I have now forgotten, attachment to inanimate objects, which is why like everyone I know loves, you know, everyone who's a millennial loves Toy Story. I hated Toy Story. You know why? That flared up my anxiety so badly. It's like, do you not think I was already worried about my toys being lonely when I wasn't there? And now that was kind of just like doubling down on my toys being sad when I wasn't there. Object attachment. Wasn't there a fancier word though?
There
is talk about emotional attachment to inanimate objects on Reddit, which I don't even click on. I don't even click on Reddit anymore because it's so toxic, but I guess there's not a fancier word. But then I was kind of reading up about it and they were like, yeah, like it could be a little bit anxiety disorder, but there were like also all humans have object attachment, and like if it gets too excessive it can get into hoarding, but don't you worry, nothing cured any little seeds of hoarding I had better than going through 35 years of my dad's stuff. So don't you worry about that. I love throwing things away. I am not at all even in hoarding. I'm not even in pack rat territory anymore. I'm not even close to that. I think the word I was looking for was anthropomorphism. Let me see how I say that. Can you play how that is pronounced, Mike? Or maybe, all right, I guess I can do it myself. Do you see what I'm looking at?
Phism.
Okay, well, you...
Anthropomorphism.
Okay, well...
Anthropomorphism.
She's even saying it in a bumpy way. You know when the person says it and you go, that's never going to come out of my mouth correctly. All right, so that I think that's the fancy word that I found because that's the underestimated benefits of our attachment to inanimate objects. Oh, interesting. I think that's... Because I was researching it and a lot of the kind of like the feedback I got was like, yeah, it's actually like pretty normal and pretty human. So it's not even anything really wrong with you. Which is, it's always a crapshoot when I look up, is this OCD or is this just being a human? Because sometimes the unexpected things are... OCD and the things that I would expect to be OCD are just like human things. Anthropomorphism is the attribution of human characteristics or behavior to a god, animal, or object. So that's actually a little bit different. That's kind of like, that's more like when, like I saw this video recently of a horse making, in quotes, silly faces at a kid. And then people who actually know about horses were like, yeah, that's a stress behavior. Like animals don't make silly faces. That's humans saying they do that. So that's what that word means. I don't have that. That's for dumb people. That's for people who are stupid. I don't have that one. I have the one that's for people who have an anxiety disorder. Okay. Anyway, moving forward, I'll work on my attachment to inanimate objects on my own time. But like, have you ever like, I mean, is this weird? have, like, before you, like, say goodbye to something or throw it in the trash, like, do you give it a little hug or do you give it a little kiss? Has anyone in the booth ever done that? Mike's fully laughing at me. Mike is fully laughing at me right now.
I'm laughing with you, Corinne.
No, you're not. I'm not laughing.
Oh, come on.
This is going to cost me $150 for 45 minutes with Kier tomorrow.
I'm sorry.
What? So you've never given like a sitcom level like glance at a space you lived in and then given the doorknob a little kiss or something. Maybe not the doorknob because that's dirty, but like the side of the door.
Just wave like to Mr. Wilson as I'm going by.
Just a little kiss or just a little tap and said thanks for everything. You never done that?
I mean, like, with an ex-girlfriend.
That's a person. That's a person. So we already know. Stop revealing yourself as a misogynist week after week. We know. Natalie, someone with more compassion in her heart.
I've definitely done the little tap. I haven't done, like, I identified with a lot of the stuff that you said. Lately, less so. But as a kid, definitely, like, what you said about Toy Story definitely felt
right. Because, like, okay, so there's these, like, showcases that were very, explicitly meaningful that were in my dad's original store. My parents bought them together in 1989, and then I moved them to my store. They looked beautiful. They're just, like, really, like, special. And everyone was asking, like, what are you going to do with the showcases? And I'm like, the showcases die with the store. Like, because I just didn't want anyone else's, like, there's so many bad people in the sports card industry. I just didn't want someone having those showcases in their store who was like trying to scam people out of their money or doing like anything like that that wouldn't have aligned with my dad's vision for the store. So I was like, the showcases die with Perfectly Centered. And then I hired, you know, Mike Racine and his moving company. Also, go watch Mike Racine's special. Mike Racine has done, he's an amazing comic. He has done so much to help me with different moves over the years, especially with Perfectly Centered. But that's not his primary occupation. He's actually like a really incredible comic. And he just put out a special on YouTube. And I watched it. And, you know, he's a more offensive comic, but I think, like, if you have, like, a darker sense of humor, he is just one of the best comics there is, and I highly recommend you watching his special. It's free. What is it called? Which is his – is it called I'm Normal? Is that his new one? It's just so good. And it's, you know, you can donate money, but it's free to watch. Yeah, that's the one. I'm Normal. Okay, so back to this. I hate when I'm like talking about a comic's a side job that they definitely don't want you to, like, you probably even know about. But anyway, so I saw him, like, and, you know, he took all my large items instead of me having to call like 1-800-JUNK, and he brought them to the dump. And then he didn't send me the pictures, but I saw in the other comics' Instagram stories the pictures of all the amazing stuff from my store, like, in the dump. And it just looked so sad. And I wish I hadn't seen it, but I didn't know it was there. And I had just, like, met this new comic. Not a new comic to me, not a new comic in general. And he had pictures of it in his Instagram story. And he was, like, loving throwing the things in the dump. So, like, from start to finish, these showcases brought people joy. But it's, like, you just don't want to see your shit, like, trashed. But then I was, like, trying to spiritual myself out of it. I was like, no, now they're part of the earth. They are broken down and part of other things. Like, I'm pretty good at therapizing myself, but I'm like, it has been hurting my heart a little bit.
Was it literally in a dump or was
it? Oh, it's in a dump. I can show you now.
Oh, that's a bummer, because I thought if it was on, like, a curb or something, maybe someone took.
But that was my choice, so I didn't want anyone else taking it.
Oh, that's
I didn't want anyone else's energy on it. Wait, I'm trying to find a screenshot. I'm not going to share this with anyone else because it's, like, personal. I actually didn't even really mean to talk about this, but I got on the – sometimes you get on the mic and you're like, I actually need to talk about this for me to get through the show. So I'm going to show the producers in the booth this right now.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
See? They're just, like, mangled and, like – and I saw them, like, throwing the glass slates and it shattering. There was something, like – the glass shattering, there was something, like, kind of free, like, free about it. I was like, Corinne, the showcases are free now to go on to become something else in their, you know, in their next life. But, you know, there's just some things you wish you hadn't seen. There's another thing I wish I hadn't seen, which is culling. But we're going to talk about that in a second in Cutie's Corner. I had already known about it, but I guess I had just somehow – smashed it out of my brain. All right. So anyway, that's the roundup on that. You know, maybe more about Perfectly Centered and other iterations in the future. But for now, Eye of the Tiger Tour, guys. Make sure to see Eye of the Tiger Tour. I have a 14-city stand-up comedy tour starting on April 17th. The first city is Tampa, Florida. The cities we really want to concentrate on buying tickets because they're less than a month out is Tampa, Florida, Miami, Florida, Atlanta, Georgia, Columbus, Ohio, and Raleigh, North Carolina. All tickets are at CorinneFisher.com. And then, of course, Christina Hutchinson and I are part of the Netflix is a Joke Festival, doing a live episode of Guys We Fucked at the Regent Theater in Los Angeles. It's a nice theater, guys. Hundreds of seats. And we got to sell all those tickets because there could be literally two tickets left and I will be not happy. Everything has to be sold out. Perfection is the only way. And if you say, you know, anything else, then I'm sorry that you're just living this life as a half ass. Hey, wackos, let's hear from one of our favorite sponsors and the least legitimate, I will say, $60 kilos. That's right, the unattainable number that no one in the world of Kratom was able to accomplish until Yo Kratom came along. For years, entrepreneurs, scientists, academics, I heard Einstein himself was working on this, all tried to solve the $60 kilo problem, and YoKratom.com figured it out. And now, thanks to their sheer brilliance, you can get a kilo of Kratom for just, you guessed it, 60 buckaroos. How did they solve this legendary $60 kilo problem? Will anyone else solve the $60 Yo Kratom kilo problem? Find out on season 4 of Yo Kratom. That's right. It's Yo Kratom's fourth year of being a loyal sponsor of this show. Let's go. YoKratom.com, home of the $60 kilo. Also, I hate that I just said let's go. It was in the copy, guys, but I apologize. It's overused. We have to undo. Let's go. Now back to the show. Okay. Let's get into it right now. Our enemy of this state. I did a little bit like this is kind of like a research based episode of like a facts you don't know. Kind of a lot of things to share. At a party. There was nothing. The news was kind of just same old for a lot of it. And things that are important, but things that we have just discussed. Ad nauseum. So I didn't want to discuss them anymore. So I was like, how about we get some new facts into our head? So this week's enemy of the state is inventor Thomas J. Midgley.
Enemy of the state.
And I was actually researching something else having to do with animals, and he doesn't have anything to do with animals. I guess a little bit as like a byproduct, but this came up on history.com. And this, it says, this 1920s inventor sped up climate change with his chemical creations. Thomas J. Midgley is now considered one of history's most dangerous inventors. And I do want to like put a little asterisk, like at the time when he was alive, I think he thought he was doing something good. So, you know, sometimes you can become an accidental enemy of this state, right? You know? So inventions through history have often made everyday tasks easier, and some like trains, the cotton gin, printing press, and computers have been revolutionary. But other inventions have backfired and proven to be detrimental in the long run. Among those who contributed some of history's most dangerous innovations was a bespectacled chemist from Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania. Thomas Midgley Jr. introduced the world to both leaded gasoline and chlorofluorocarbons, CFCs, now considered two of the world's most harmful chemical compounds. While Midgley won multiple prestigious awards during his lifetime, research in recent decades has shown how the compounds he developed for use in cars and refrigerators ended up ravaging the environment and poisoning people, which also probably animals. Midgley, born on May 18th, 1889, graduated with a degree in mechanical engineering from Cornell University in 1911. In 1916, he joined General Motors' Delco Research Laboratory under Charles Kettering to work on improvements to automobiles. His focus was tackling the problem of engine knock. Knock was a common problem in early 20th century engines. When an engine neared its maximum load, it made pinging banging noises that could destroy it. After a lengthy study, Midgley discovered that tetraethyl lead, TEL, as a fuel additive virtually eliminated knock. Even better, he found that TEL increased engine performance and speed. With the support of GM, General Motors, oil companies, and car manufacturers, TEL went on the market on February 1st, 1923, under the brand name Ethyl. GM and Standard Oil formed the Ethyl Corporation to handle manufacturing and sales. Midgley became a vice president and served on the board of directors. The Ethyl Corporation never mentioned lead when marketing TEL. I wonder if it's TEL, but we're going to say TEL, since the dangers of lead poisoning were well known. The corporation insisted that TEL was safe, but at the same time encountered their own dangerous episodes with the chemical. In October 1924, at an experimental plant in New Jersey, five workers died and 35 others experienced tremors, hallucinations, and other symptoms of lead poisoning. Midgley himself had been poisoned by inhaling fumes of TEL and washing his hands in the stuff to demonstrate its safety. You know what? And I appreciate how dedicated he was to his own pursuits. He was forced to take a vacation to cure himself, but the incident did not prevent him from advocating for ethyl. Instead, he took the corporate position that workers didn't take proper precautions. David Rosner, a historian at Columbia University and co-author of ethyl? I just stopped. This is just a show where I stop and I learn.
I think it's ethyl.
Right. That's what I was thinking. Because I'm like, I mean, like
ethyl alcohol?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I'm like, it's like a word I just, I'm like, again, like how? Okay. Anyway, David Rosner, a historian at Columbia University and co-author of Lead Wars and Deceit and Denial, says Midgley had an enormous interest in self-delusion when it came to a product that he was so connected to. Of course, he had an ethical dilemma. Whether he fooled himself, lied, or was just oblivious to what future generations would have to deal with is beyond me. The scandal at the research plant prompted several states to ban TEL, but then the tide turned. The Federal Bureau of Mines released a study heavily influenced by corporate pressure, which asserted that TEL was safe. Once again, money leads the way. This and an aggressive marketing campaign established gasoline infused with TEL, leaded gasoline, as the fuel of choice. In the ensuing decades, lead exposure resulted in a string of health maladies, particularly among children. One recent study hypothesized that increased lead exposure may have contributed to the mid-20th century rise in crime, which is so interesting. Starting in the 1970s, TEL was phased out and as of 2017 only produced in a few places in the world, which is wild because like that's so recent. But lead contamination remains in areas where TEL fueled vehicles were common. Midgley's next problematic invention was CFCs. CFCs were developed to solve a long-standing problem with early refrigerators. They were extremely unsafe. The best early refrigerants were ether and ammonia, both flammable, explains Tom Jackson, author of Chilled, How Refrigeration Changed the World and Might Do So Again. And just like, I love Tom Jackson. Like, I would like to meet a guy who just wrote an entire book on refrigerators. Like, what is he like? How do you come to that? Like, how are you inspired? Like, I love that you got so into refrigerators. Like, there really is something for everyone. Jackson describes how an industrial-scale refrigerator on display at the 1893 Chicago World's Fair caught fire and eventually exploded, killing 17 firefighters. That's so many. The domestic refrigerators that followed around 30 years later used sulfur dioxide, which, although not flammable, was highly toxic. Leaks of this gas killed families in their sleep. GM's refrigerator division, Frigidaire, had been showing losses for years. Midgley, with a team of scientists, undertook a search for a non-toxic, non-flammable refrigerant. In 1930, they found a solution in dichlorodifluoromethane? That's close, which they sold under the brand name Freon 12. This was the world's first CFC. To demonstrate its safety, Midgley inhaled the stuff and blew out a candle. I love that guy too. Like, he is the enemy of the state, but like, yeah, he's got Riz. Freon caught on and became ubiquitous in refrigerators, cooling units, and aerosol spray cans as propellants. What Midgley did not know is that CFCs deplete the Earth's ozone layer, you know, and how could he, which protects life from ultraviolet and other forms of radiation. Even worse, CFCs are super greenhouse gases, which contributes to global warming and climate change at a much greater rate than even carbon dioxide. Even though CFCs like Freon 12 were banned or severely restricted, starting with the Montreal Protocol in 1987, they linger in the atmosphere. According to National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, CFCs have an atmospheric lifespan of up to 140 years. Lauded, Midgley was won almost every prestigious award in his profession. He was given the Willard Gibbs Medal, the Nichols Medal, the Priestley Medal, and the Perkins Medal. Aside from TEL and Freon, Midgley also held about 170 other patents. It is only in recent decades that the damaging consequences of his inventions became known. Also, like, what a cool job. Like, inventor, still one of the coolest jobs that there is. Midgley is not solely responsible for all the environmental ills generated by TEL and CFCs. Businesses of the day often disregarded the potential impact of pollutants in the environment, either by underestimating the impact of those pollutants or thinking that it was a negligible problem. Neither was there any appreciable regulation of potential pollutants. In the case of CFCs, he believed them to be less harmful than exploding refrigerators. Okay, okay, you got some logic there. I think it would be unfair to criticize Midgley for his... It's just really, are you playing the short game or the long game? Because both very harmful, and I think in the long game, probably these things are, you know, are going to hurt more people, larger scale. But like, yeah, if you're looking at something under a small lens, like killing an entire family in one fell swoop feels more horrific than, you know, slowly poisoning the environment. And that's why climate change, people don't like to talk about it. Because, you know, again, not interesting. Someone out there, I know someone out there is listening and smart enough and has the passion behind it to do it. Create something. And probably not a podcast. It probably has to be something that's just a little more than talking, but like create something like Schoolhouse Rocky to talk about climate change. Because again, climate change, like animal rights, feels very obnoxious when talked about. There's a lot of finger pointing energy, right? But it's like super important. So someone listening, start the wheels in your head turning and create a way to talk about climate change that it feels accessible no matter what your education level is, that makes it feel like it's important, but it also makes it feel like it's doable. Like you can actually do it, like beyond bringing a tote bag. Like there's other, make it feel more accessible. I know you're out there. So, you know, that's your assignment, whoever you are. This is your sign. I think it would be unfair to criticize Midgley for his work on CFCs, says Jackson. They were an inelegant solution to a commercial problem, but one that Midgley and others thought was safe. On the other hand, Jackson says that since the toxic effects of lead were already known in the 1920s when he developed leaded fuel, he must have been aware of possible health damage, but went ahead anyway. In 1940, Midgley contracted polio and was paralyzed. I guess he got his, huh? Ever the inventor... The ending made me, it shouldn't have made me laugh, but it did make me laugh. Ever the inventor, he developed a harness system of ropes and pulleys to help him maneuver and get out of bed. In an ironic twist, wait for it, his invention strangled him to death on November 2nd, 1944. And now that was Enemy of the State, but that last part could also be Corinne Fisher's party topic of the week. So if you want to share that, you know, I hope you have a note section in your phone where I teach you all these facts and you really do talk about them at parties, because I don't really go to parties anymore because, you know what, there's nothing to party about, guys. I just don't really want to talk to people. I am going to a one-year-old's birthday party this weekend, though, and I'm pretty excited about that. I've gotten most of the gifts, and I wish I was turning one, you know.
Don't we all?
Right? So fun. All right. Another reminder, I guess I like knew this in the back of my head, but last week when we were talking about Quiet on Set and John Wayne Gacy, and how weird it was that Brian Peck had John Wayne Gacy, not only had John Wayne Gacy art in his house, but was showing it to children and then had a correspondence with John Wayne Gacy while John Wayne Gacy was incarcerated. I clipped that up and I put it on my Instagram, And someone reminded me, he was like, yeah, he was a serial killer, but like, let's not also forget, the guy said pedophile. He wasn't a pedophile according to my research. He was like an ephebophile. I think the youngest person he fucked before he killed was 15 years old. But I mean, that is crazy because that's aligned with exactly what Brian Peck was doing, because Brian Peck also wasn't a pedophile. He was an ephebophile. And so I was like, holy shit. Like, again, like people hiding in absolute plain sight. And I just can't wait until something happens and the government confiscates my computer. And they go, why is this bitch constantly Googling ephebophile and pedophile? Like, what a crazy bitch this is. But I did think that was interesting. And really, like, that makes that part of the documentary, it was already, in my opinion, one of the craziest parts of the documentary, but that makes it that much more so, even crazier. So thank you for pointing that out. Again, like, I know a lot about serial killers, but I was like, I guess maybe I didn't know. Like, I knew Dahmer was fucking his victims. I guess there's a lot, like most times in these serial killings, there is also a sexual element, because both serial killing and sexual assault are so much about control. Killing. I mean, serial killing is also about, you know, sociopathy. But yeah, like when you look up serial killer victim selection, it says the most common belief is that the killer wants to feel complete control over another person. They thrive on the fear their victims display and see the murder as the ultimate form of dominance over a human being, which is almost identical to what the psychological reason for most sexual assaults is. So like, it does make sense that there is to most of these serial killers a sexual element. And I think a lot of times, when the stories of serial killers are told or have been told historically, like, they concentrated more on the murder, because even though murder is considered a larger crime societally, it's also in a weird way something that feels more palatable than sexual crimes, just because of our relationship with sexuality. So I think a lot of times, like, sexual elements to crimes are kind of like glossed over in these serial killer documentaries or serial killer movies that we watch. But yeah, that was like really important part of how fucked up it was that he was corresponding with John Wayne Gacy in prison. Like, obviously, like, Brian Peck, like, he felt like a kinship, obviously, with John Wayne Gacy, and almost, I'm guessing, like, probably thought of him as some kind of a muse or an idol. Like, when he really looked deep into it, the documentary, again, Quiet on Set, very interesting. But when you talk, you know, things about that, it's like, well, there's a part where instead of interviewing yet another, you know, cast member of All That I've never heard of, maybe go into the psychological aspects of things like the collection of John Wayne Gacy paintings a little bit more, which I think that would be a lot more fascinating. But you know what? It wasn't my project, and I don't like when people tell me how to do my art. So, you know, just a note, just an idea. But I love the doc, you know. Say it with me, wackos. You know this one by heart if you're an avid listener of Without a Country, which I hope you are, and I thank you. Hi there, responsible adults over the age of 21 living in states where Delta 8 is legal. Do you want to get high? Do you want to get really high? Do you want to get really super duper legally high? Well, then now's the time to go to yodelta.com, where you can stock up on high quality lab-tested Delta 8. Obviously, they keep buying ads because people keep buying product and they keep fucking love disassociating. And then they buy more ads to remind people who have disassociated that they need more of the product to disassociate yet again. And the loop continues. So if you're over the age of 21, living in the majority of states where this is legal, you're going to head over to yodelta.com and stock up on Delta 8. What's Delta 8? Well, it's found in hemp and can be legally shipped to various states to get you high. And that's really all the information they needed. At yodelta.com, you can find a mix of gummies and vapes for all your getting stoned needs. And I, Corinne Fisher, I can tell you that Delta 8 works. I can tell you that. And that these products should be taken responsibly, of course. Don't be an idiot. So once more, that's yodelta.com, the official Delta 8 sponsor of the GAS Digital Network. And if you use promo code GAS, G-A-S, you're going to get 25% off once more. That's promo code GAS, G-A-S, for 25% off. Yo Delta, home of the Delta 8 that will get you super high. Now, back to the show. Also, last week, man, you know, you guys saw me really lean into that Washington Post article about birth control. That was kind of my absolute everything. We got a lot of people being like, thank you so much for talking about that. I gloated a little bit on this week's episode of Guys We Fucked, or the one that I recorded this week that you'll hear later. But what I forgot to share with you is, just out of curiosity, I searched birth control pills on the article search on the Fox News website to see like what the energy around birth control pills in articles was from the right recently. And yeah, I mean, most of it is negative. So 14 days ago, there's the talk of O-pill, which we talked about last week. So that's positive. It says Wisconsin announces over-the-counter birth control pill access for Medicaid patients. But after that, it's pretty much all negative. So there's one that says seven things that can make birth control pills fail. And I mean, they can fail, but I've been pretty sloppy with them sometimes over the years. And again, they're pretty effective. Another one says health alert for women. Early use of birth control pills linked to higher rates of depression, study finds. That's like a really common thing. And I'm like, yeah, I don't think it's the birth control pill. I think it's life, okay? Because both young men and young women are fucking depressed, and men aren't on birth control pills. So what's the excuse there, you know? Another one says prostate cancer may be linked to birth control pills in water supply. Could birth control pills hinder your pregnancy? Birth control pills and teen depression possibly linked. And then there was one positive that says birth control pills may keep nuns healthy. So it's basically like, if you're not fucking, it can kind of keep your shit working. But yeah, it's just like when you search it, like there's a lot of negative articles, and it's like, okay, well, I guess it's not interesting to write an article like birth control pill keeps woman childless and happy for 20 years straight. But if someone wants to write that article on me, I'm right here, baby. Happy to participate if there's any journalists out here. What's that smile on my face? It's the birth control pill. All right. And then I did get a nice little email from a wacko regarding the birth control propaganda conversation. Hi, Corinne. I'm a 33-year-old student who goes to school with people who are all about 10 years younger. I can attest that the dialogue around hormonal birth control is now very skeptical and judgmental. I have heard women in their early 20s mention the exact points of that Washington Post article, specifically that the pill is, quote, not natural. Yeah, neither is Botox. You guys are getting that, and makes you attracted to different types of men. Like, all girls in their 20s now do preventative Botox. Again, as someone who has worked in skincare for a long time, preventative Botox, that is them trying to fucking make money off of you. You can start at the like number one first sign of a wrinkle and you will be absolutely fine. Like, it does train your muscles, but your muscles when you're that young are already staying in that position. So like, you don't need to start training them because they're naturally that way. I've got like so many 25-year-olds at the Medi Spa I go to have tried to talk me into preventative Botox, and I go, there's no need for that, right? And I go, we're gonna keep doing like, I do like acid peels and stuff, like, but I'm like, we're not putting things in our skin that we don't need because one day this part might wrinkle. That's nutty. And so you're doing that, but you're not doing something that's been around since 1960 that changed history. Botox, it is a way of women having autonomy over their own bodies. I do agree with that. And you know, I'm pro plastic surgery. Do what you want with your body as long as it's not hurting anybody else, and as long as it's for the right reasons. But like, you know, Botox didn't change women in politics, okay? It's required of women in politics if they want to win something, but it didn't change women in politics. Whereas, you know, we talked about last week, birth control pill literally changed like the way women function in society for the better. So if we're talking about not natural, like what a weird excuse. She said the 20-something year old thinks it's not natural and makes you attracted to different types of men. It really does seem like TikTok is where many of these women get advice regarding the pill. That being said, I've heard that, that propaganda of that nature before TikTok was even hot. So it's coming from someplace else and then just kind of being regurgitated on TikTok, right? One friend who struggles with extremely painful periods. Mind you, this is a law school where critical thinking is highly encouraged. I'm disturbed by the anti-pill rhetoric I have come across, and I feel the pill is being somewhat decontextualized from the liberating modern marvel for women that it actually is. And I 100% agree with you. To now some sort of shameful concession a woman makes when she isn't savvy enough or in touch with her body enough to perfect her hormonal cycle. It's very fucked up. Thanks for all you do. I guess I can read your name, Michelle. So thank you so much for sending that article. I noticed a lot of millennial women were very on board with what I was saying. But again, it's like the squeaky wheel gets the oil. So just as loud as people have been about all the negative side effects of birth control pills and all these negative experiences they've had. And listen, negativity gets more eyes on it than positivity, unfortunately, but I think that people who have had really wonderful experiences with birth control, like myself, that's why I really have always been very loud about it for like the past 10 years on Guys We Fucked specifically, because I can't tell you just how many it's been so important in my life and so freeing, really. All right, moving on to girl. This is about women's sports from Fox News. The same shit over and over again with them. But like, again, I've seen this so much, I felt like I did have to bring it up. Wisconsin Democrat governor faces backlash after vetoing GOP bill to protect female sports. You despise all women. In vetoing the bill, Governor Tony Evers said he objected to codifying discrimination into state statute. And I know Mike, girl dad, resident girl dad, feels really passionately about this. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers, a Democrat, is facing backlash after he blocked a GOP-led measure that would have prevented transgender students in the state from competing on school sports teams that do not align with their biological sex. Evers said the bill he vetoed fails to comport with our Wisconsin values. And what are Wisconsin values? Can someone tell me? If you're from Wisconsin, let me know. In a letter Tuesday to state lawmakers, Assembly Bill 377 passed through both chambers of the state's GOP-controlled legislature earlier this year. I am vetoing this bill in its entirety because I object to codifying discrimination into state statute and the Wisconsin state legislators' ongoing efforts to perpetuate hateful and discriminatory rhetoric and policies targeting LGBTQ Wisconsinites, including our transgender and gender nonconforming kids, Evers wrote. This type of legislation and the harmful rhetoric beget by pursuing it harms LGBT Wisconsinites and kids' mental health, emboldens anti-LGBTQ harassment, bullying, and violence. I do agree with that. I agree that like putting this stuff in laws makes it seem like gives people an open door policy for bullying. But then I also want to see like, what are the stats? Like how many transgender folks are actually trying to compete in women's sports? My question is like, this is like kind of feels weird, but it almost should be like, when did you transition when you were 12? Yeah. Then compete in girls. Did you transition last year and you have the strength of a man still, you know? I mean, again, shit that no one wants to say, but like things that you can say. I also, again, just want to reiterate, I don't think this is happening that often. So the amount of news about it to me does not seem appropriate if we're comparing it to the amount of times it's happening in actuality. So it harms LGBT Wisconsinites and kids' mental health, emboldens anti-LGBTQ harassment, bullying, and violence, and threatens the safety and dignity of LGBTQ Wisconsinites, especially our LGBTQ kids, he added. And like, I agree with that. But I also say, like, where is any law ever about women's mental health or even honestly, like, little boys' mental health and like toxic masculinity? Like, I also want to hear about that because we should be concentrating on the mental health of children of all backgrounds. Like, it's really important and it's really fucked up, just mental health in general. And our obsession with ignoring it until we get older and then we over-obsess on it. And then that's also not good. Evers vowed Tuesday to veto any bill that makes Wisconsin a less safe, less inclusive, and less welcoming place for LGBTQ people and kids. The measure would have most prominently prohibited pupils of the male sex from participating on an athletic team or in an athletic sport that is designated for females under par, which is also part of the conversation. Because like when we talk about transgender athletes, we're basically always talking about transgender female athletes. We're pretty much never talking about transgender male athletes. And I think that's where the problem lies, right? So if we're just talking about transgender athletes in totality, you're like, oh, yeah, this makes sense. But the way it's always someone who transitioned from male to female, that's the strange part. Because then you go, all right, well, it seems like there's only one place where it's an issue with women. Shortly after he announced the veto, Evers shared a clip of him rejecting the measure on social media, writing, "I just vetoed Republicans' anti-LGBTQ bill to ban trans and gender nonconforming kids from participating in school sports teams that align with their gender identity." Can you look up how many transgender like high school athletes, or I guess NCAA, it's college athletes, are fucking in Wisconsin? It's going to be like three. Like, again, I don't understand the obsession. Riley Gaines, the former NCAA swim star who seemingly become the face of fairness in women's sports after being forced to compete against biological men, took aim at Evers over his decision to reject the bill. Breaking, "I hate women and children," Gaines wrote in a post to X. "Fixed it for you." Oh, dear. "Giving love and respect is not done by allowing girls to be injured and have their opportunities stolen," Paula Scanlon, a spokeswoman for the Independent Women's Forum, wrote in response to Evers. Adrienne Curry, I know her from America's Top Model, a model and actress, also weighed in on the governor's decision, accusing him of despising women. And again, when someone like Adrienne Curry is on your side, that's the point in the article where I go, oh, this governor was definitely right for vetoing the bill, because she has some of the most insane beliefs I've ever come across. And I used to watch her on that reality show where she married briefly the guy from the Brady Bunch. I don't know, I'm really dating myself here, but that was a millennial enjoyment for me. FYI, you despise all women and want us to fail in every way, Curry wrote. Like, I used to follow her on social media and I was like actually getting stupider by doing it. So I had to unfollow. She's gorgeous, though. Thank you. Thank you for hating women so much you can't even hide it to save face in the public. And again, like, I think there is a good conversation to be had about why when we talk about transgender issues, it's basically always transgender women encroaching on cis women's space, or that is that is the narrative, right? Whether or not it's true, again, we can have a larger conversation about that. But I think and this goes back to when me and Joe DeRosa were on the show together. The problem was always with transgender women. We never hear anything about transgender men. And there has to be something that it's because they are fucking raised as women. So they're raised to be quiet and then they transition to like male, and whether or not they're happy or not, they just are quiet about it. Like, I think that has to be it. But again, like, everyone is so fucking scared of being called a TERF or being canceled that no one can have this conversation, which I think could be a really good, interesting conversation. And it doesn't need to be like, you hate women or you're transphobic. There's a lot of space in the middle for just like conversation. Another social media user wrote in response, "Sad day for women's sports." I mean, you know what's a sad day for women's sports every day with how unsupportive people are of women's sports. In vetoing the bill, so maybe we should concentrate on just like supporting women's sports, buying a ticket to a WNBA game. Maybe that's what we can do.
Attendance way up.
Is way up?
Way, 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 way.
Okay, so that's great. Yeah. I mean, because there was a while there when like every male comedian had a joke about the WNBA, like everyone. Why are you making a little?
Because there's one great WNBA joke that I've heard.
From who?
Danny.
Oh, okay. No, I've heard multiple. I mean, I didn't say they were good, Mike. I didn't say they were good. I said I heard many WNBA jokes. Danny's is good. You are right. That policy, Danny Polishchuk, for those who are interested in a good WNBA joke, follow him, Danny Jokes on Instagram. That policy, which does not prevent biological males from playing on female-designated sports teams, requires transgender females to undergo a full year of hormone therapy before they are able to play on female sports teams, which is nothing. 1 year? Imagine, like, you're a teenage guy and you go on 1 year of female hormone therapy. Like, you're still going to be quite strong, unless you were weak before. Evers also argued that the measure may conflict with existing federal law, saying the Education Department's 2021 Notice of Interpretation declared that the title, what's IX-9? Or is it 11?
Title 9.
Okay, that the Title IX prohibition, I literally have no idea what Roman numerals are, unless it's 10, that Title IX prohibition on discrimination on the basis of sex is inclusive of sexual orientation and gender identity, which is inclusive of transgender students. Prior to Evers's veto, the measure passed the state assembly on a party line vote of 63-35 in October. The measure was then approved last month, mostly along party lines by state senators in a 21-11 vote before it reached the governor's desk. And what did you come up with for stats on transgender athletes in Wisconsin? Michael in the booth.
So I'm seeing articles. I'm trying to pull up an article from the Wisconsin Journal, but it's paywalling me, but it's fact-checking whether or not there are even a dozen in the state.
Okay, so exactly what I thought. Yeah. It's we are creating legislation for 0.00001% of the population, and that's bullying, right? Because it's like, I think it's something where, like, if it comes up in your school, maybe you can come together, like, some, you know, leaders in the school board can come together and make a decision that is fair to everyone, maybe involve the student athletes as well. But, like, it is not, it's just, it does feel like bullying when there's so many things to worry about in the world, especially when it comes to children with mental health and suicide rates among young people and school shootings, and this is what we're going to concentrate on. Yes, I agree. If I was on, you know, the one swim team and the guy who transitioned a year ago came on and took the gold medal, would I feel a certain type of way about that? Exactly. And as a student athlete, as these cis female athletes did handle it, and they did speak up, and good for them, and I think they should be listened to, right? Because that is fucking unfair. And that's going to take away scholarship opportunities, like, for you not placing first, and I think that is a great conversation to have. But for, you know, the governor to get involved when it's less than a dozen people who even fall under this in the state, that is bullying. That's exactly what fucking bullying is. So that's the problem. It's something that we can absolutely have a conversation about if it makes sense. It doesn't make sense when it's 12 fucking people. Let me look at Riley Gaines's. But again, it's just every kind of what we talked about with Dylan Mulvaney, where it's like every person. Okay, so this is Riley is a woman, right? She's not the trans athlete, right? This is the one speaking out on it, host of Outkicks Games. Who the fuck is this? Pro common sense. Swimming against the current, fighting for common sense. Oh, yeah. So this is, that's fucked up that I didn't know if this was a biological. Because I was like, I know who Riley Gaines was talking about. So Riley Gaines, yeah, is the biological woman who was speaking out against it. And she's pretty fucking jacked, dude. And good. And so it's like, that's exactly what I said, what I'm recommending. Like, if you are involved in such an incident, like, so she spoke out about it. She did the work. She wrote the book about it. Like, good for her. Great. Handled. The government doesn't need to get involved. Riley Gaines is on it. Okay. We're divvying up the work here. Now, government can work on school shooting and kids committing suicide. Riley Gaines can work on the one transgender swimmer who took a medal from her. Cause that's her story. Okay. It's not Wisconsin's story.
I'm not going to say Leah Thomas's name.
I just forgot. I had a visual of her in my head. But, like, that one, of course, stood out because anyone who sees a picture of Leah Thomas goes, that person transitioned yesterday. Great. And I wish you well on your journey, Leah Thomas, but not if you're fucking swimming against me. And also to see Riley Gaines, I hadn't really seen a picture of her, like, her kind of guns. She's fucking jacked. She is not She's not like, she's not a little sissy girly girl. She's fucking a jacked ass swimmer. So I'd be pissed too. I'd be pissed if I dedicated my fucking whole life to swimming. Okay. Yeah, I mean, we've all seen this picture. But again, this is why this picture was, and this was so widely circulated and this story was so popular, because we had to continuously use the same example because it is so uncommon that this happens. And yes, when this happens, fucking speak up. And Riley did speak up because this is unfair. And we can all see it with our eyes. And that doesn't make you a TERF, that it is unfucking fair. It's unfair. We all agree on this. I know we do.
Is it fucked up that I was like, all three of these people look trans?
No. I mean, you just saw me check. I just got confused if Riley was trans or not. So that's what I'm saying. It's just like, okay, everyone's going to the gym a lot, okay? But again, like, it's a simple conversation that doesn't need to get, you know, into problematic territory. It really can, like she says in the title, it can be common sense. But when, then you go too far, right? And that's where, like, they kind of like redefine sayings that should not be so hateful.
Can we just agree?
I'm not sure.
That if you, all right, I do genuinely believe Riley Gaines was coming from a justified place in her indignation and all that.
I agree.
But RileyGaines.com, the subheader for that website, now says athlete, advocate, woman. Riley Gaines is the leader defending women's single-sex spaces, advocating for equality and fairness, and standing up for women's safety.
Okay.
When your thing about being wronged becomes your crusade, I check out completely.
No, and I agree with you. I mean, and that's where capitalism comes to play, though, because it's very hard when first of all, you feel like something was taken from you, right? So she felt like she should have gotten the medal that Leah got. So she feels like something was taken from her. Then she's offered these other things, these other wins, these book deals, you know, maybe like a documentary, that stuff like that. And so you feel like, well, I have to take these things because I am owed these things. Like, I understand it conceptually. Yeah, I agree. Like, it's hard, though, because, like I don't feel like it was I don't know. And also when she's only, you know, 24, I feel like, yes, if this is the biggest injustice that ever happens to her in her life, she's led a very luxurious life. But at 24, this is the most important thing that's ever happened to her. And when you're a young athlete, it does feel like that's your whole world. And like that, maybe like that's her ticket to financial freedom or the career that she wanted. And because she didn't place first, that now feels like all that work, you know, there's so much work that and so much fun you don't have when you are that level of a successful student athlete. So like, I do have empathy for her. Like she, you know, it's the same as like if the rules changed in comedy and I go, I literally didn't enjoy have a 20s. Like I didn't do any of the things that people in their 20s do because I was so committed to making it as a stand-up comedian. And if all of that was like robbed from me for some, like, because of what people can argue is identity politics. Yeah, I would be pissed. I would be pissed. I think there's so many variables here. Like, yeah, yes, I agree. It's not the biggest thing and it doesn't need to be your crusade, but like things feel so much bigger than they are when you're 24. And I mean, an injustice like this, like must just feel so heavy when you're 24. And like, good for her that she did the right thing. And like, yeah, let's just hope it doesn't turn into like her whole entire personality that she's consistently monetizing. Because then, yeah, that's annoying. And I don't love the part where, like, she puts woman on her website because, like, that to me feels a little bit – then we're getting into, like, that feels like a little bit transphobic because it's, like, you are saying, like, I'm a woman and you're not when it's, like, we could just look at the website and know you're a woman. Well, I had to check, but most people could tell that Riley was a woman. She just had such big guns. I didn't know how she got them. I was like kind of impressed. All right, wackos, let's hear from our sponsors over at Capsulite. Are you a drinker? Are you a fucking booze hound? That's fine, but be smart about it, okay? Capsulite prevents feeling awful the day after drinking. You can take it before and during drinking. It is the most potent product on the market, doctor formulated, supports your liver. Toxic byproduct of alcohol is the cause of symptoms of a hangover, not dehydration. And it's a portable packet, so you can take it with you to the bar or the club, or you can just have it in your purse or your pocket if you're not sure you're going to drink that night. Don't let not having your Capsulite with you stop you from drinking. Drink on if you want to drink. If you want to drink, fucking drink and enjoy it. All right, if you're interested in trying Capsulite for 30% off at checkout, you can use code GAS. Again, that's GAS for 30% off at checkout. Capsulite. Drinking, keep doing it. Back to the show. All right, going on in the same, Fox was really on a trans roll this week. So this is about, and I always like to read about J.K. Rowling because I am just very interested in that storyline and how her career progresses because of that. This is also from Fox. Police not pressing charges after J.K. Rowling dares them to arrest her for challenging hate speech law. Rowling promised, if they go after any woman for similar rhetoric, I'll repeat that women's words. And they can charge us both. And I think this is the same, like, as what's happening with J.K. Rowling is kind of the same thing that's happening with Dave Chappelle, right? It's like the first thing they said wasn't crazy, but then they just, like, their personalities are so defiant, and that's what makes them the incredible artists and creators that they are, that they're just going to keep doubling down when you attempt to silence them. So it's like, if your solution is to really have them stop spreading transphobic language, like, the best thing to do is just leave them both alone, because you're just, because by trying to silence these two individuals, you are also adding to transphobia. That's my hot thought of the week. And I really think that, because it's like both sides just want to be right so badly. And at a certain point, like, the people trying to silence them just have to concede and stop giving them attention. And then they will stop saying the things that you are filing as transphobic, some of which are transphobic, right? Overall, I don't think anything J.K. Rowling did was terribly bad. I think there was, like, points when she should have just stopped and her pursuit stopped being noble and started being, like, petty. And I love a petty bitch, but not when, you know, not when a whole group of people are at stake. And then, you know, Dave Chappelle, it just, like, made him not funny. So, like, please just stop talking about it so he can go back to writing jokes that are funny. J.K. Rowling, the author of the Harry Potter book series, challenged Scotland's new hate speech law on Monday, and police have declared they will not prosecute the author. Scotland's new Hate Crime and Public Order Act was activated on April 1st. And I think laws like this, even though they're not in America, I like to cover them because this is the kind of stuff that can seep into America. And again, yet another reason why we shouldn't be shitting on living in America. We really don't acknowledge and fully understand the freedoms that we enjoy here. And my, oh my, I think are we going to be really sad as they are slowly taken away from us, which has already started to happen. Handmaid's Tale. The text of the bill, originally introduced years before, warns against acts that stir up hatred against a group of persons of certain protected characteristics, including age, disability, religion, or in the case of a social or cultural group, perceived religious affiliation, sexual orientation, transgender identity, and variations in sex characteristics. The maximum penalty is a 7-year jail sentence. Rowling, who lives in Scotland's capital city of Edinburgh, began an April Fool's Day social media thread. April Fool's Day is like Halloween. It just gets people in trouble. By listing multiple biologically male criminals who claimed to be transgender just prior to being sentenced for various horrific crimes, expressing mock relief their avowed gender identities were being respected. She then switched her rhetoric and declared, only kidding, obviously the people mentioned in the above tweets aren't women at all, but men, every last one of them. It's like, you made a point and it was kind of funny, and then you added the last line. Like, I mean, I agree. Like, has transgender identity been manipulated by some people, men? Yeah, of course it has. Of course it has. But everything historically has been manipulated and taken advantage of. It's not just sexual, or it's not just gender identity. Everything has been manipulated and taken advantage of, even in that way, even poverty. After slamming Scotland's new hate speech bill directly, Rowling declared, by poverty, what I mean is, like, people taking advantage of food stamps. The amount of people over the years I know who 100% did not need food stamps, who were just lazy. And I'm talking about fellow artists, who literally just chose to be lazy and are never going to succeed in art because they just don't have any talent, quite frankly, using food stamps. And that was hard. That was hard to digest for me. After slamming Scotland's new hate speech bill directly, Rowling declared, "If what I've written here qualifies as an offense under the terms of the new act, I look forward to being arrested when I return to the birthplace of the Scottish Enlightenment." The BBC reported on Tuesday afternoon that social media comments made by J.K. Rowling challenging Scotland's new hate crime law are not being treated as criminal, Police Scotland has said. And I mean, they shouldn't, because when challenging a new law with words starts becoming something that you can be arrested for, like, you are in murky ass territory. Rowling hailed the decision, declaring, "I hope every woman in Scotland who wishes to speak up for the reality and importance of biological sex will be reassured by this announcement. And I trust that all women, irrespective of profile or financial means, will be treated equally under the law." After one commenter speculated that the local police are not prosecuting Rowling because she has massive wealth to fight such large charges in court, Rowling vowed, "If they go after any woman for simply calling a man, I'll repeat that woman's words and they can charge us both at once." And the thing is, it's like, it seems like J.K. Rowling is like honestly like trying to bait them into arresting her because it would give this thing that she has become arguably obsessed with. And that's the weird part about it. She's become obsessed with this, right? And so now she's just looking for more excuses to get mad about it. So again, the solution here is to simply ignore her, right? And I know I'm not doing it by, you know, reading the article right now, but this is what the show is about. And J.K. Rowling's not listening, quite frankly. And again, I like her, but it's just like, dude, this is now you feel like a crazy get off my lawn person with your obsession with this. I think it's something that we all have to keep an eye on, you know, when we're allowed to speak and when we're allowed to use words and not. And I'm sure, obviously, this is a woman who has dedicated her life to words. This is an author. This is very important to her. Words and language are more important to her than the average person. That's why I think why she feels so passionately about it, right? And, you know, this is a woman who has written fantasy but is unwilling to live in fantasy. Again, admirable traits, but like, the get off my lawn energy I could do without. Scotland's new hate speech law has sent shockwaves across Scotland and the entire UK. The Telegraph reported that former deputy leader of the Scottish National Party, Jim Sillars, launched a campaign to resist the Hate Crime Act and campaign for its repeal. Today, on their own admission, Police Scotland will translate itself from a service into a force for one particular purpose, the pursuit of people who speak their minds. Siller said, "This law inflicts a deep wound on the face of Scottish society." Rishi Sunak, the Prime Minister of the UK, commented directly on Rowling's challenge to the Scottish police, declaring, "We should not be criminalizing people saying common sense things about biological sex. Clearly that isn't right, and that we have a proud tradition of free speech." All right, that concludes that Fox article. And just for anyone who's interested, I'm appearing on Fox News Saturday night once again this Saturday night with Jimmy Fela. I think, you know, we might be supposed to be pretending it's live, so just like don't tell anyone. But sometimes it actually is live. But I wanted to give you guys a heads up in case you're not following me on Instagram so you wouldn't know about it. But it's a great show, and Jimmy is doing such a great job. It's a great show in like that they book me and that my great friend is the host, and that I think it's great to get more diverse opinions on Fox News Channel. And as soon as they let me talk a little bit more politics, I'm going to be a happy, happy lady. But yeah, it's exciting. And I think there is something to like having the same faces on time and time again, and then you get familiar with them, and it can be like almost like a Joe Rogan experience, right? Where you have the same people on, you get to know them, and it becomes like these familiar people that you chat with. But only on this show, we're talking like in a conservative space, but they're allowing liberal voices in there. And I think that's pretty fucking cool. And I couldn't be prouder that I am known as the liberal on Fox News Saturday night. Like, that's great. That's exactly what I wanted and needed in my life. Okay. Sorry, I was just checking the time, what we can do here. All right, so this is Cutie's Corner. Man.
Welcome to Cutie's Corner! Yay!
Wow. I wish you guys could see Mike and Natalie dancing in the booth. They love this intro. All right. All right. So this week's Cutie Corner is all about culling, and it's specifically chick culling. Culling can happen to many different animals, but it's specifically about chick culling because I saw a video about chick culling, and I had seen a video about this years ago, right? And I guess it was so traumatizing that I just put it in a different section of my brain and didn't think about it. But I was reminded of it this week, and I'm in a place where I can handle it now and talk about it, and it needs to be talked about. And I have not eaten eggs all week, even though they used to be my favorite food because of this. And this video has actually fucking haunted me. Okay, so if you're not familiar with culling, chick culling or unwanted chick culling is the process of separating and killing unwanted male and unhealthy female chicks for which the intensive animal farming industry has no use. So basically, it's little baby chicks, like, yes, and that, you know, there was a lot of egg propaganda. I don't want to say propaganda because it is accurate, but like there was a lot of egg chatter because of Easter. I, for one, you know, when I was a little kid, my parents had hid plastic eggs. They didn't hide real eggs because who the fuck wants to, when you're a kid, eat a bunch of hard-boiled eggs? Now I do because I need the protein. But as a kid, no, I want candy in a plastic egg, okay? I want a little plastic ring in a plastic egg. I want a temporary tattoo in a plastic egg. That's what I want. Or a $5 bill or something like that. But anyway, so basically what they do in the egg industry is they, and this is mostly male chicks, but obviously, yes, unhealthy female chicks as well. They have the chicks on a conveyor belt, the little cute yellow ones, yes, those ones. And there's workers, human workers, who have to go through and check if they're male or female. And then they throw the male ones into a grinder and they are grinded alive because they are of no use to the egg industry. And they just, that's the fastest way they thought of killing them. Some are also suffocated with poison gas, but a lot are just thrown alive into a grinder. So that's what we're going to talk about this week. I knew this was happening. And again, there's something in my head that like I blacked it out and I was reminded. And I said, now is the time to talk about this. And I'm not going to try to make people stop eating eggs. I'm going to eat eggs too, but it's like, it's more so like I want people to be aware so that we can work together to change laws, because there's no reason that there can't be a more ethical way of like, why can't we just send these chicks to a farm, right? Like, what? And I know people are thinking like, oh, why can't you use the male chicks for chicken, which isn't like better, but it's a different type of chick. I read into that too. So it's just like completely crazy. And then, I mean, adding on to it, like, I know for those of you who think that humans are more important than animals, I ethically disagree with you, but I hear you. Okay. I hear you on that. And so if we want to talk about it from a human perspective, let's talk, you know, people in the comments were kind of saying like, how could a human being do this? Well, I'll tell you how a human being could throw a chick into a grinder. If that human being needs a fucking job and the job that's available is at the egg factory, and they get there and they don't really have a lot of education and it pays well, and then they get health benefits, and all they got to do is throw male chicks into a grinder all day. Well, you disassociate because you go, well, if I have to kill a baby male chick to feed my human babies, I'm going to do that because I'm a mom or I'm a dad, all right? So that's how you can get there. But then, you know, much like people who have to kill, you know, prisoners, you know, with lethal injection or whatever, like, let's talk about the trauma, whether they know it or not, that is definitely getting absorbed into someone whose job it is to kill all day. I mean, there has been countless studies done of the mental health of people who work in slaughterhouses killing larger animals like cows and stuff. And I mean, the same thing is happening to these people. So again, like, if animals is not your priority, I don't agree with you, but I understand that, how you could have this ingrained hierarchy in your head. I mean, that even exists with men and women in society. So certainly I can understand how it exists with animals and humans. But like, that should, there's multiple living things suffering in a situation like this, I would highly argue. So no matter where you're coming from, and if you don't care about animals or people, then you might want to kill yourself. Okay. that's my tip of the week. That's what culling is, specifically chick culling. Again, it happens to other animals. And I found a Vox article about it. This is from last year, but it was something that was like not from a specific, like, you know, vegan.com or something. I wanted a little bit more accessible. And this is the future of technology that could also assist in helping stop culling. It's from May 1st, 2023, called Save the Male Chicks. The egg industry brutally grinds up billions of male chicks each year because they can't lay eggs, but new tech could change that. Even the most clueless consumer likely suspects that all is not well on the big factory farms that raise animals for food. But let me share the details of one practice with which you might be unfamiliar. Every hour across the world, around 742,000 freshly hatched male chicks are born. A few hours later, they're tossed into a grinder. So literally being born into the world just to be tortured and killed, which kills them instantly. And I know you said, oh, they're killed instantly. Shut the fuck up. This is so barbaric. Or gassed with carbon dioxide, which knocks them unconscious before killing them. Rarer methods include burning, electrocution, suffocation, and drowning. While the female chicks go on to lay more than 1.2 trillion eggs humans consume annually, 6.5 billion male chicks each year are hatched, only to be quickly snuffed out. That's because they don't lay eggs, so they're of no use to the egg industry. And because they don't grow as big and fast as other chicken breeds, they're of no use to the chicken meat industry. Even though culling costs egg producers an estimated $500 million a year, it makes more economic sense to just kill the males on day one rather than spend an additional dollar raising them. Again, it always goes back to money. It's literally more important than life to corporations. Undercover investigations into hatcheries have drawn some public attention to male chick culling, enough that in recent years, a number of European countries, including Germany and France, have gone so far as to ban the practice, giving hatcheries and egg producers a few options. Raise male chicks for meat, albeit inefficiently. Raise dual-purpose breeds, ones that lay a relatively moderate number of eggs and grow to a moderate size, import hens from neighboring countries, or shut down operations. Again, I don't know, where's the part we just give them to a farm and they all live a nice life and hang out? But there's another option. They can use emerging technology to identify the sex of the chick while still in the egg so they can destroy it before it hatches, before the chick can feel pain. I love it. Chick abortion. Let's do it. That last possibility has gained momentum in recent years. Since 2019, five companies have managed to commercialize in ovo, meaning in egg, sexing technology that enables them to identify the sex of the chick around either day 9 or day 12, 13, from when the egg incubation starts, depending on the approach. Such advances have already saved tens of millions of male chicks from being born, only to be swiftly culled. It's estimated that 10 to 20% of Europe's hen flock now comes from cull-free hatcheries. But there's a catch. Scientists believe that chick embryos could potentially feel pain as early as day 7, wah wah, of their 21-day incubation period. Wait till pro-lifers get their fucking, or sorry, anti-choice people get their hands on this article, huh? That means that even with the most advanced in ovo sexing, male chick embryos could still be experiencing suffering. A new preprint, it still seems better than the grinder option. A new preprint study funded by the German government and conducted by researchers at the Technical University of Munich provides some evidence that chicken embryos may not be capable of feeling pain until much later in the incubation period after day 12. Researchers applied potentially painful stimuli like heat and electricity to chicken embryos from day 7 to 19 of their 21. There's always animal torture involved in ultimately saving animals, kind of like that plant-based meat article we read, but it's just hard. There's just suffering involved in all forms of life, you know? From day 7 to 19 of their 21-day incubation, measuring their heart rate, blood pressure, brain activity, and movement, all in an effort to uncover whether the stimuli translated to experienced pain. Brain activity only began on day 13. Movement from beak stimulation increased significantly on day 15. Blood pressure increased significantly on day 16. Heart rate jumped on day 17, and body movement increased significantly on day 18. The findings arrive at a critical juncture for the effort to end annual shredding and gassing of 6.5 billion male chicks. Beginning in 2022, Germany required hatcheries to destroy male chick embryos prior to hatching, and starting in 2024, German hatcheries must destroy eggs containing male embryos before day 7 of incubation. That will require in ovo sexing technology that works earlier than any company has yet been able to commercialize. Another job for one of you. I know one of you out there is great at tech. This could be, that could be your calling. If you want to work in tech, but from a perspective of not necessarily, you're like not, you're interested in tech, but not interested in tech for financial gain. You're interested in tech for innovation. You're interested in tech and you also love animal rights. Again, you can mix your interests, right? As a result of the new study, however, Germany's Ministry of Food and Agriculture has suggested the government will instead require hatcheries to destroy eggs before day 13, which means the companies that cull at days 9 and 12 are in the clear. France's ban on chick culling, which went into effect in January of 2023, starts on day 15. The study also provides clarity to policymakers elsewhere. Italy's ban goes into effect in 2026, but doesn't yet stipulate a cull day threshold, while the European Commission is expected to eventually ban the practice continent-wide. But the German study may not be the final word. Future research could determine the pain threshold to be sooner or later than day 13. We have to see whether this will become the new consensus or whether more confirmatory research has to be performed, said Mateus Corian and Simeo Santos, leading in ovo sexing researchers at the MeBioS division from the Department of Biosystems at the University of Leuven in Belgium over email to Vox. Animal advocates are cautiously optimistic. I think that we need to be very flexible, said Sharon Nunez-Go, president of Animal Equality, an animal rights group that has campaigned in Europe to end male chick culling. I think if German policymakers move it up to day 13, it's wonderful, but there could be studies that come out in a couple of years that say, no, it's actually day 11 or it's actually day 10. George Herlin, managing director of in ovo sexing company AgriAT, noted over email to Vox that the study leaves the door open to pain perception beginning even later. The scientists only say that from the 12th day of incubation, a pain sensation can no longer be excluded, but they did not prove it either. Despite the scientific and political tailwinds behind efforts to phase out male chick culling, they face strong headwinds with the global egg industry under pressure to take on other costly issues like converting barns to cage-free and bringing record prices down amid high inflation and a deadly bird flu outbreak that has resulted in the death of tens of millions of hens. I tell you, if I would gladly pay many more dollars per carton of eggs if it had this, that, like, you know, culling free, the same way as when you buy tuna fresh, it's, you know, it's like some are marked dolphin safe and some aren't, right? Like, so that is something I would gladly pay more for. The same as many people are happy to pay a dollar more for non-dairy milk options at Dunkin' or Starbucks. Like, I know that's like a conversation people are upset about it, and I agree, like, it would encourage more people to drink those options, but like in the meantime, I'm happy to pay a dollar more. And I was happy to pay a dollar more when I was broke. So this is not like, you know, rich Corinne talking like a lot of you like to see, you know, you have more money. I don't have that much money. Okay. First of all. And second of all, this was like when I was broke, I also made decisions about what was important to me and what wasn't important to me. You know, the main thing right now is I just take a lot more Ubers. That's where my money goes. Cause I like someone to drive me. Those challenges aside, ending the culling of 6.5 billion male chicks is a critical and doable low-hanging win for animal welfare if the technology can further advance. There's more than one way to sex an egg. One thing the in ovo sexing field has going for it is that there are so many ways to identify the sex of chickens before they hatch, which is why some 13 companies and academic teams have sprung up over the last decade to turn their theories into workable technology. Some companies employ non-invasive imaging to look inside the egg, which is why AgriAT uses in its Cheggy machine, scanning 20,000 eggs per hour at 9 hatcheries across Europe. It's fast and low cost, but it only works for brown eggs, and it identifies the sex on day 13, meaning the embryos could still feel pain. Though it can stun them prior to killing them, rendering them insensitive. It can also work on day 12, although it's less accurate. The company is currently trialing a new approach with researchers at the Technical University of Dresden to identify the sex as early as between day 4 to day 6 of incubation. All right. And there is a bunch more articles of like examples of different companies that have done it. But overall, we don't need to go through the entire thing. That is the main thing I wanted to talk about. Culling awareness. I mean, there's just so many bad things in life to be aware of. It's like actually it's actually pretty funny. All right. There's a much longer article that Free Press put out this week that I don't want to get into right now. I'm trying a shorter episode this week. Well, for multiple reasons. I have a bunch of shows that I got to do tonight. But also, I wanted to see if a shorter, number one, what you guys think of a shorter episode. I know the wackos, you love the show. So what are your thoughts on a shorter episode? And also to see how it plays out in the old YouTube algorithm. Because usually we're coming in at like over 2 hours and that is so long. But next week I want to talk about this. It's from the FP.com, again, Free Press. It's about selective euthanasia, right? And right to die activists. The title of the article is I'm 28 and I'm scheduled to die in May. So we're going to talk about this next week. If you guys want to read ahead, we're going to discuss it. And also, if you have any experience with, selective euthanasia, Dr. Kevorkian type stuff, can you email me at withoutacountrypodcast@gmail.com and specifically add in if you would be willing, if you are, either you can write me something or if you'd be willing to talk to me on the show, either via phone or Zoom, depending on if you want your face in it or not. Obviously, having your face in it is like better for the show, but I totally understand if you want to remain anonymous besides your voice. I think it's a really interesting ethical discussion and something that, especially in other countries, has been popping up more and more. This woman is from a Dutch town on the German border specifically. And I think there are specific countries that are much more like Nordic countries, are much more like open to stuff like this. But I can see it, especially with the mental health care crisis in America becoming popularized here, pretty soon if things don't get better. Right. And the last thing of the week that I'm going to add on to Cutie's Corner, I found this from NPR. A government proposal to kill 500,000 owls sparks controversy. So a proposal by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to kill roughly 500,000 barred owls to protect the spotted owl has conservationists and animal welfare advocates debating the moral issue of killing one species to protect another. The proposal, published in November, garnered attention in recent days after dozens of wildlife protection and animal welfare organizations signed a letter opposing the plan. In a March 25th letter responding to the proposal, a group of 75 organizations urged Secretary of the Interior Deb Haaland to scrap what it calls a reckless plan. Non-lethal management actions to protect spotted owls and their habitats should be made the priority action, it read. But the USFWS says if no action is taken to cull, that's our fucking word of the week, the barred owl population, the northern spotted owl faces extinction. That feels like natural, like selection though, right? No, you know, it's like, I don't know, fucking humans, we always got to put our dirty fingers into everything. The barred owl is crowding out its less aggressive relative. But it's like, okay, well, shouldn't we leave them to their own devices and maybe the northern spotted owl can grow some balls, can grow a fucking clit? The barred owl is crowding out its less aggressive relative. This is just how evolution happens. The northern spotted owl in the northwestern states, according to the USFWS, to ensure the survival of the northern spotted owl, a threatened species, the service is proposing the mass removal of over 470,000 barred owls across California. Why don't you have them fight? Do some owl fighting, because you love to monetize everything. Sell tickets and we'll watch the owls fight and whoever survives gets to live. I guess it'll be a lot of this other owl. Washington and Oregon over a 3-decade span. The proposed action will also help prevent declines in the California spotted owls, another species facing competition from barred owls, it says. Animal rights advocates say the proposal is unsustainable. Wayne Passell, president of the Center for a Human Economy and its lobbying arm, Animal Wellness Action, who co-authored the letter, called the plan unworkable. He says it's doubtful that the government's plan can be successfully executed across such a long time frame. If you don't do it dutifully and religiously every single year for 30 years, it has no chance of succeeding, Passell told NPR. He argues that lethal management programs often succeed on closed ecosystems such as islands, but a management plan covering such a vast region wouldn't be as effective. Cameron Barrows, a retired emeritus researcher at the Center for Conservation Biology at the University of California, Riverside, says that without a barred owl management strategy, spotted owls will disappear. If nothing is done to slow the encroachment of barred owls, you will lose spotted owls, he said. There aren't a lot of choices left. To him, the letter opposing the proposal effectively means we'd rather have barred owls than spotted owls, he said. No, to me, it means you're leaving it up to nature. That's what it means. A conservation, and I'm very into conservation. And again, we've talked about this before, or I have. Like, that's why I argue anytime people like say zoos are inhumane. I hear you, but I actually would make the argument that there really is a place for zoos, because humans, we've already ruined so much for animals, like that we can't take that back. We've already encroached on their land so much, right? So it's like, I think when you talk about zoos and zoologists and a lot of people working at zoos who, you know, aren't zoologists but are animal lovers and people well-versed in animals, it's at least an opportunity to, you know, house animals who cannot be released back into the wild because of injury or whatever. And then additionally, there is so much basically at any zoo that is a legitimate zoo these days that you go to is doing a ton of conservation work that's really, really important. And I've had really long conversations with people at multiple zoos, because I go to zoos a lot on the road, to kind of like, and they are happy to have conversations and inform you what they're doing, because that's how like interested and excited they are about animals. So again, that's a place, like that's one place where I disagree. Like I agree and feel bad about like how much I loved the, I still love the circus, but like the animal usage in circuses, yeah, that was abusive. But I really disagree with some animal activists on zoos. I think zoos are doing more good, well-run zoos than they are harm. A conservation organization in Washington also supports the proposed action. Birds Connect Seattle published a letter in January citing preventing extinction as one of its priorities. We are not celebrating this management plan in issuing our support, said Claire Catania, the executive director of Birds Connect Seattle, but she says her organization recognizes its necessity. Conservation experts who support the proposal say it's a difficult but necessary plan that will help solve a problem that humans helped create. In 1990, the northern spot, I agree with that. Exactly. That's a problem. Humans keep intervening and keep making things fucking worse. In 1990, the northern spotted owl was listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act after environmentalists fought to protect the bird's habitat from the logging industry. The threatened designation also means the Fish and Wildlife Service is legally required to protect the northern spotted owl. But around the same time, the barred owl, originally native to the eastern U.S., emerged as another threat as it moved west, encroaching on spotted owl territory. Human-driven habitat destruction spurred the barred owls to expand across the country, Catania says. Their move west has since displaced their smaller, less aggressive cousins, the spotted owl, according to Cornell Lab of Ornithology. The spotted owl's habitat, old growth forests, has become very patchy due to deforestation and are accessible to the more adaptable barred owl, says Barrows, the UC Riverside conservation researcher. This is a problem that humans have created. This wasn't nature happening on its own, Barrows said. The Fish and Wildlife Service proposal, outlined in a draft report assessing its environmental impact, is the latest attempt in a more than two-decade effort to save the spotted owl from extinction. A decade ago, the FWS began a four-year experiment to kill up to 3,600 barred owls in the Northwest. According to Barrows, this strategy slowed down but didn't stop the barred owl invasion. The public comment So the public comment period has closed, but that's not really relevant to you. All right, so that is our show for today. Again, I did a bit of a different template for this show, more Cuties Corners and stuff. But my party topic of the week that we'll discuss next week will be selective euthanasia. So please, if you have experience with that, again, email me at withoutacountrypodcast@gmail.com. If you had a family member do it, anything like that. If you know Dr. Kevorkian, God, I would be so interested. You know, if you knew him. But yeah, and your thoughts on that morally, not just like, I don't want just like an opinion, like this is my opinion on it. Like, please have some actual like relationship to it. Otherwise I'll just handle a topic myself. That's our show. Again, make sure to head over to CorinneFisher.com to get tickets to my 14-city Eye of the Tiger tour featuring Chloe LaBranche. The ticket sales overall going well, but the tickets that really need to be purchased, if you're coming to any of these shows, really get these tickets, because again, these late ticket sales are no bueno. They stress me out, and venues do cancel when you do this like day of fucking ticket buying. It's very bad for everybody. So Tampa, Florida, April 17th. Miami, Florida, April 18th. Atlanta, Georgia, April 19th and 20th. Atlanta, we really need to rock those ticket sales. That's probably the worst sales of any city. So, and I'm doing like extra shows there for some reason. So Atlanta, call a friend, call a cousin, bring your mom. If you're an Atlanta fucker, if you're an Atlanta wacko, if you're just an Atlanta fan of Corinne Fisher comedy, please do that for me. Columbus, Ohio, April 25th. Excited to see you guys. You're historically a pretty good audience, and I haven't been there in years. And then Raleigh, North Carolina, April 30th. After that, we're doing Philly and Boston. And then the next leg of it comes down. But all the cities are mentioned. CorinneFisher.com. And Los Angeles, we'll see you with Guys We Fucked on May 11th. Tickets are also available for that at CorinneFisher.com. Follow me on Instagram and all social media at PhilanthropyGal. Follow the show at Without a Country Podcast on Instagram. And please subscribe to the YouTube. The YouTube numbers have been rocking. Like, thank you so much to everyone who has subscribed. Again, if that's not the main way that you take in the show, I hear you. It's one click and it means so much to the show. It really, really, really helps. I appreciate it so much. Stay searching for the truth. If you want to email me any other topics that interest you, it's withoutacountrypodcast@gmail.com. Peace and love. Have a great week. Bye.